It's Let's Talk here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff and Scott with you. We will have some open phone time coming up at the end of this very hour.
All right, this is Scott the Space Geek. All right, I've been looking forward to this one for a while now because I'm a space geek. All right, we got this big event coming up on Monday the 8th, the big solar eclipse. Folks, are you ready? Are you ready for an eclipse or something?
Bring it.
And so we want to welcome to our program Dr. Chris Palma from Penn State, Department of Astronomy. Dr. Palma, first off, good morning and thanks for being with us today.
Good morning to you, and I appreciate the invite. I'm looking forward to this.
And apparently I've heard a rumor that you're a big wrestling fan. Is this true?
It is. One of the guys I went to grad school with was a wrestler in the ACC, and he converted me all those years ago.
There you go. So you're a certified good guy. So we know we have a trustworthy guest on now.
He was converted. All right. That sounds like a religious experience.
You would not believe how many wrestling fans are in a very similar position.
It's a religious experience, folks. Go figure.
Yeah.
Well, first off, now, besides wrestling, all right, Dr. Palma, if you would, let's start off. Tell us something about yourself, your background. What do you teach at Penn State? Tell us about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I've loved astronomy since I was a kid, certified space geek, like you were saying. And I'm actually a Penn State alum, so I did my undergrad here, and the department here is wonderful. I got interested in teaching, so I went to graduate school at the University of Virginia, got interested in teaching there. You know, when you're in graduate school, you know, to pay the bills, they ask you to help teach classes, and I just loved it. It's so much fun being able to give folks a chance to look through a telescope, explain what they're seeing, and so I came back to Penn State years ago and came back as a researcher, but I said when I started, you know, I'm really interested in teaching, I'm really interested in running programs for anybody who wants to learn more about astronomy, and that's what I've been doing ever since. So I teach intro courses in astronomy. I teach upper-level astro courses to some of our majors. I do programs in the community. We have a planetarium in Davy Lab. And so generations of kids in this community have come through our planetarium. And some of the older ones now probably saw me for planetarium shows, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So anything astronomy, I'm happy to share with people.
Well, I tell you what, I've seen your name a number of times or places involving this eclipse coming up in a week and a half. Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, Dr. Palma, I'm from Penns Valley, and I think either Penns Valley reached out to you or maybe you reached out to them and involving this event in a week and a half. What was that connection there?
Yeah, so I don't know if you remember, there was an eclipse like this in 2017, right? So people could just go outside and look up. And it had been so long since there was an eclipse in Pennsylvania that we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how many people would be interested. So we got, back then, we got as many eclipse glasses as we could, and we had maybe a couple thousand, and we ran out quickly. So this time around, I was fortunate. There's an organization in Pennsylvania that's funded by NASA. It's called the Pennsylvania Space Grant Consortium. And they had an opportunity for us to request some funding through them. And this time we bought enough eclipse glasses so we wouldn't run out. We'd be able to share broadly. And just over the years, whenever we've done programs, you know, we always try to reach out to Bald Eagle, Bellefonte, Penn Valley, Phillipsburg. And we had enough eclipse glasses that I was, I started local. Like I started with, you know, the teachers I knew in state high and in the middle schools. And then as I was getting started sort of handing out eclipse glasses, you know, folks in our department, their kids went through Penn Valley. So they said, hey, you know, here's my son's principal. Can you get in touch with him? And again, with the Penn State athletics connections, you probably know the athletic director out at Penn Valley is Nate Althaus.
Dr. Nate Althaus.
Basketball player.
I know him very well, yes.
Yeah. Dr. Nate Althaus was my roommate when we were undergrads.
Oh,
no kidding.
So that was the connection there. I reached out to Nate and I said, hey, I've got eclipse glasses for everyone in Penn Valley. He picked them up and got them out there, just last night I got 1,000 to Bald Eagle. I dropped some off with one of the principals in Belfont. A student teacher from Clearfield came and picked up a box. So we've been doing our best to get Eclipse glasses so that every kid, you know, within miles of the campus will have a pair that they'll be able to safely look at the eclipse.
Couple questions about that. What is the difference between these glasses and like my Ray-Bans or regular sunglasses? Yeah. What's the difference there, and what is the danger if people don't have these glasses in looking up at the sun or the eclipse?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's honestly the one we've been trying to get the word out on. Your sunglasses are meant for you to be able to do everything you would normally do, right? You need to be able to drive with your sunglasses. You need to be able to, you know, mow the lawn while wearing your sunglasses. So they knock down the sun's light just enough so that you can just go about your day and you can still see. That your sunglasses are definitely not strong enough to look directly at the sun. You know how, like, every once in a while you just accidentally look up at the sun and it's so bright you start to squint and turn your head? If you were to keep looking at the sun, you could damage your eyes. And the nice thing is, like a lot of things, our bodies prevent us from doing a lot of stupid things. This is a situation where we do want to encourage people to look at the eclipse. And so those eclipse glasses we've been handing out they reject much, much more sunlight than your sunglasses do. Your sunglasses just knock the sun's light down a few percent. These knock the sun's light down by 99%. So you can look directly at the sun while wearing a pair of them. I some of the kids I've been doing presentations with, they've asked me, can I only use these on the day of the eclipse? And I say, if you want to look at the sun on a normal day, you can put these glasses on and look at the sun, and I've tested them out a few times. It's perfectly safe. But you never want to look at the sun directly if you're not wearing something like these eclipse glasses. Now we've gotten them out. Like I said, just about every kid for miles around should have a pair through the school. Now we're handing them out. The Spikes are our partners, the State College Spikes. We've given them some, so they're handing them out through their team offices. The Discovery Space, which is a children's museum out on Atherton, we've given them some, and they're handing them out. But sometimes people say, well, what if I can't get a pair? These eclipse glasses are actually based on welder's glass. So how much they reject light is similar to the glass that you would have in a mask if you're a welder. And so if you do have access to welder's glass, welder's glasses in different ratings, like some of it lets a little more light. So you need to have, this is something I'll probably ask you to check up on me and maybe I'll follow up with an email. I think it's grade 13 welder's glass is the same as these eclipse glasses. So some folks, if you have that hanging around, you can also look at the sun safely. But you definitely, if people remember one thing, please don't look at the sun with just a pair of sunglasses on. Those are not strong enough to keep you safe.
All right, now a follow-up question there, Doctor. Again, the build-up to this thing has been for many months. I mean, some people are like going to Erie and spending $500 for a night for a hotel room and something ridiculous and whatever, you know, all that stuff. And online, seemingly everywhere, eclipse glasses. And I'm very wary of online cheap sales. Yep. I mean, are you worried? It sounds like you're worried about that too. How does somebody know that I've got a good set of eclipse glasses?
Yeah. I will say I wouldn't worry too much right now. In 2017, I don't think anyone was prepared for how popular this was going to be. And so I do know some people who in 2017 ordered some offline, and there were stories that they were fake and they weren't good enough. But this, like you're saying, this has been basically since 2017, we knew the 2024 one was coming. A lot of the companies that make them have been making them in preparation. People like us, like, we bought a bunch to have enough to hand out. I know the folks at the Penn State Erie campus have been doing the same thing. They ordered thousands of them. They've been giving them to all the schools in the Erie area. So I think there's going to be a lot less problem with fakes this time around because there's just so many good ones out there. But there is a standard, like there is a standard for like, so a good pair of these glasses will say that they adhere to ISO, and then there's a number associated with that that says these have been tested. And so there are, there's also like, you know, there's so much that's, you know, being shared through NASA. So I always encourage people to like pay attention to what NASA has been saying. But there's been stories like in like WPSU, the NPR station, shared a story that they have a suggestion. Here's a way you can test these. Like the hard thing about testing them is they're really only, they knock down light so much that pretty much the only thing you can see through them is the sun, right? But if you hold them really close to like a light bulb, you can test to make sure that they are strong enough and that they're protecting your eyes. So I would worry a little bit about fakes, but probably not a lot, because like I said, all the big companies that make these have been making so many that there's really no incentive this time around for people to sell fakes, because there's just no market for them like there was last time. And I'll just add again, like so many of us are giving them out for free that you should be able to find a free pair just about anywhere. We gave some to Sklo Library as well. We're trying to get some to like all the community orgs where people would go and would like to, you know, grab a free pair of these glasses.
All right. Now, this might be a dumb question, okay? I had a crazy idea that I've got a smartphone. So on Monday the 8th, if I went outside with my smartphone and got a tripod and I kind of aim my smartphone at the sun as this is happening, like straight on, I mean, it wouldn't, it would hurt my eyes. It wouldn't hurt a phone, right? Like a camera and a phone, would it?
It would overwhelm it. Like it would, it's so bright that if you point your phone at the sun, It would just make it so that like the whole picture was white, right? It would make the sensor register too much light. So these eclipse glasses are, you can think of them as a filter that they're honestly, a good way to think about them is they're really like a mirror that only lets a small amount of light through. So most of the light gets reflected back away from you, but so. People who want to take pictures of the eclipse, you can buy what's called a camera filter, that's a solar filter for any kind of camera. And the material that these are made of is actually not super expensive. So like a solar filter for a camera isn't going to break the bank. I mean, they're not, you know, super duper cheap, but they're also not like so expensive that you wouldn't even want to do it. So like I have a friend who's an amateur photographer, and he told me, he's like, I went ahead and I ordered my solar filter for my camera, so I'm ready. So I think if you were to point your phone, it would just overwhelm the sensor, and you would get nothing. So if you really want to take pictures, I would encourage folks to just look for what's called a solar filter for their camera or their phone.
All right, I'm glad I asked then. All right, that's cool.
Now we're seeing different things on this is. Having an eclipse is not that uncommon. What makes this one unique for our area? And how often does something like this, where we're getting 95% or more, how often does this actually occur for us here?
Yeah, that's the key, the for us, right? So eclipses in general happen every few years. But the thing is, it's what's really going on, right? So the moon is passing in front of the sun from our point of view. So for you to see the eclipse, what's going on is you're in the moon's shadow. And the moon is big enough and far enough away from us that it blocks the sun. But the shadow of it that lands on the Earth is also small enough that not everyone is in the shadow. So if you're in the shadow, you see an eclipse. If you're outside of the shadow, you see nothing out of the ordinary. So just in the last, like, 20 years, there have been eclipses that have gone through China, that have gone through Africa. A lot of eclipses, the only way to see them is if you get in a boat and you're out in the Pacific Ocean. So NASA publishes these maps that shows the path that the moon's shadow will take, and the only people who are fortunate to see the eclipse have to be in that path. So So this one, the pass goes through upstate New York. It goes through Erie. Then it goes through Ohio and Indiana down into Texas. So what's really unique is that this is the first time in years that there's an eclipse so close to us that you can drive and be in what's called the path of totality. And even though State College, we're not going to get a total eclipse, like you said, we're going to get 95% because we're so close. So every few years there's an eclipse, but the probability of there being one near you, it's more like every few hundred years. So after this one, the next time there'll be an eclipse where a lot of folks in the United States can see it is going to be 2044.
All right, there you go. That's
Doctor, we're going to
we'll pick it up
in.
There on
we'll
the other right side back. Of this break.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
You can listen to the Fox 98.7 everywhere. Search the Fox 98.7.com. The Fox 98.7.com.
At home, at work, and in the car.
Fox Sports.
Turn it up. Turn it up.
Sweet America.
True freedom of speech is uniquely American. So speak up and speak out live on the radio at Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Call the Fox phone toll free, 844-THE-FOX. That's 844-THE-FOXX. Your opinion really does count. And you'll never be thrown in Fox phone jail because, hey, we don't have one.
Sweet America.
Get up and get going. The Fox is here for you. Start the day knowing.
Hey, have you checked out our website, 987thefox.com, our online home for everything The Fox? Click the stream link wherever you are. Information on Let's Talk with recordings from recent shows and interviews. Information on our afternoon regional sports programs and links to all of the great Fox Sports shows heard the rest of the day. Check out our Let's Talk blog posts, local high school sports scores, and links to several area news outlets so you're always in the know. 987thefox.com.
Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Beer Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Beer Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Beer Belly's is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbellysbeverage.com. Beer Belly's Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Beer Belly's.
Talk about great prices. Center Hall Farm Store has fantastic deals to help you save money all winter long on heating wood pellets.
Come here, Bear. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. And for your ferocious little pomapoo, shepherd, horses, and just about every other farm animal, even your birds. Center Hall Farm Store has created its own perfect, unique mixture of feed, along with commercial feed of your choice. Center Hall Farm Store, 110 West Allison Street, Center Hall. CenterHallFarmStore.com.
Hi, this is Corey Comfort from Joel Comfort Toyota in State College. Are you looking for a dealership to call home? Joel Comfort Toyota is a locally owned family business that has been serving the community for over 45 years. Come see us and let us help you with your next vehicle experience. We're located at 120 East Clinton Avenue in State College, just behind the Waffle Shop on North Athens Street. Or visit us 24/7 at joelcomfort.com. And remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The title and tag service that is customer-friendly and locally owned is at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned in Pleasant Gap. And as part of the Joel Confer family of dealerships, Monica Prisk is experienced and has been serving customers for 13 years. Cameron Confer is on the title and tag team and is there to help you with all of your title and tag needs. Stop at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned at 475 East College Avenue in Pleasant Gap and have Monica or Cameron answer any of your title and tag questions. Remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox, in touch with our community in the Happy Valley. Two Center County school districts have announced early dismissals for Monday, April 8th. That's the afternoon of the historic solar eclipse that is expected to cut across the central part of the country. The State College District will dismiss 2 hours early on April 8th. while Phillipsburg Osceola will let go at 1 p.m. The eclipse will begin around 2 p.m. through 4. 40 p.m. with the darkest moments around 3:20 p.m. when many schools have regular dismissal.
Get up and get going with the Happy Valleys, 98.7 The Fox.
It's Let's Talk here on a Thursday morning. Jeff and Scott with you, and again, a little open phone time coming up at the end of the hour.
Now, again, our guest is Dr. Chris Palma, professor of astronomy at Penn State. Now, Dr. Palma, I tell you what, we had to go to that commercial break because the computer says we have to.
So stupid computer.
So you were saying that the next, I don't know, the next big eclipse that would affect us somehow is...
There's a chance we may not be around for it.
Let's repeat, because we had to kind of cut you off there. When is that going to happen?
Yeah. So the next one that's going to go through the U.S., through a chunk of the U.S., is 2044. But the next one that's going to go through part of Pennsylvania is 2099. So they're common across the world, but they're rare in any one location. And so that's why this one is getting so much buzz, because a solar eclipse going through Pennsylvania is a pretty rare thing.
All right, I'd be about 130-something years old. I could hang around for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, hopefully. Yep. That'd be nice. Now, again, right here where we are, we've said 95% totality or whatever. Yep. I mean, how dark is it going to get here that afternoon?
Yeah, I'll give you my best way of thinking about this. In 2017, we got about a little more than 70% eclipse, and it felt like sunset. So it was the middle of the day, it was the afternoon, and it got dark enough that it felt like, oh, the sun is setting, like it's going to be dark here pretty soon. So 95% is enough that it's going to get, it happens around, it'll be 95% around 3:20 in the afternoon. And so in the middle of the afternoon, it's not going to get full-on dark because we're not 100%, but it's going to get darker, and it'll feel like, you know, that like 20 minutes before real dark sets in. So and people describe it as feeling unsettling. Like, it seems weird for it to be dark in the middle of the afternoon.
Do we have, I'm sure we do, but do you know what the data shows in terms of the impact? Like, we know it's coming, and it's still, think, going to disrupt us a little bit, right? Like, and throw us off a little bit. But for, like, wildlife out there where, how much does this kind of affect just the overall... environment that we have, the ecology system that we have.
Yeah. It's not really, really disruptive. It just, because the whole eclipse lasts hours, right? It takes a few hours for the moon to slowly move in front of the sun. But if you're in Erie, where they're going to get the total eclipse of 100%, the time of totality where it gets full on dark only lasts for between 3 and 4 minutes. So it does, like people say that, you know, if you're in totality, one of the weird things is the animals and insects start to behave oddly. Like, the animals think, like, whoa, is it dark? Is it time to come out? Insects start to how mosquitoes are worse around dusk? The mosquitoes come out earlier than they would, right? But it's over... The darkness lasts only a few minutes, and then it slowly gets brighter again. So things pretty much return to normal pretty quickly. And so it feels weird for us. It feels weird for them, but only for a short time.
Gotcha.
All right. Now, this might seem like a dumb question again, Doctor. Are there some things that people just should not do that afternoon? I mean, in the middle of the afternoon, like you just described, are there some things that don't do that afternoon? Don't go out driving.
I think don't work. Is that not right?
Yeah.
Working is too hazardous.
Yeah, I don't think so, because it's like, honestly, the thing I'm worried more than anything else is the day of. I mean, you've seen it, right? Everybody's talking about it. Lots of people are going to Erie. Lots of people are going to Cleveland or Buffalo. I think the traffic on the 8th is going to be horrible. So I've been telling people, you know, if you're traveling somewhere, just plan that you might not be able to get out of there very quickly. But other than that, it's going to get dark for a few minutes in the middle of the afternoon. Sometimes people do worry, like I what if I have the eclipse glasses, but, you know, I just forget and I look at the... So some people have said, like, I remember when I was a kid all those years ago, like, my parents kept me inside and shut the curtains. So some people are really nervous about the safety aspect. And I try to tell people, as long as you're being safe, you know, you're wearing the glasses, you're fine. But I don't think people have to worry too much.
What I heard you say is definitely household chores are out that day. Don't risk it with doing dishes or laundry. That's what I heard you say.
Then. Yeah.
That was my understanding. Sure, yeah. That was my interpretation. Yeah. Not worth the risk. Don't do dishes on the 8th of April.
Reading between the lines.
Yeah, that's what I picked up on it.
There you are. Okay. All right, Dr. Palma, before we let you go for a few minutes, Scott the Space Geek here. I want to talk about some other stuff, okay?
Yep.
Let me start with this one. And actually, I just read a story on this either yesterday or the day before. Your opinion, is there a Planet 9 somewhere out beyond Neptune and Uranus? Is there some hidden planet out there that's doing weird stuff?
Yes or no? And we're still disrespecting Pluto. I'm not happy about this.
Yes. So what is your opinion? What's going on way out on the edge of the solar system?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and I'll tell you that's something I teach about in one of my classes. So you hit one of my favorite questions. The thing about Planet 9 is there's some objects out past Neptune that are sort of synchronized in how they're moving, and usually the way that happens is because there's something else out there pulling on them. And so that's been an idea that's been around now for like more than 10 years, and people have been searching, but it's like every time they search, they narrow down where the thing could be, and there's not too many places left for a Planet 9 to be. So this is one of those answers you might not like. It's possible, but it's pretty improbable. So I think it would be cool, but I think the chances of us really finding a Planet 9 are pretty small.
Well, I read this piece I read either yesterday or the day before. Essentially, it says there is no Planet 9. There's other things going on out there with gravity and so on. There's no hidden planet where the aliens are hanging out, you know, and all that sort of stuff. That just doesn't fly. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Now, I tell you what, Doctor, I'm a huge Webb Space Telescope fan. I mean, this thing up there is amazing. Folks, if you're not familiar, this giant telescope, it's a million miles from Earth at a certain spot beyond the moon. And certainly you've seen pictures because, Doctor, the pictures from this thing are jaw-dropping.
Yep.
Like,
wow.
And I remember this thing launched on Christmas Day 2021. Now, granted, pandemic, all right, whatever. I mean, Christmas Day, I'm watching TV, watching this thing take off from South America. The rest of my family's doing Christmas stuff. And like, you idiot, what are you, because this is really cool. Okay, that sort of thing. Now, am I right or wrong, though? Again, the pictures are incredible. The information already is incredible. First off, how long is this thing supposed to continue up there? Like, what's the life expectancy of this thing?
Probably pretty long, right? So in general, if the satellites that you might be used to thinking of that you know, maybe they study something for a few years and stop, you know, NASA builds smaller things and bigger things. So this telescope is considered one of their great observatories, so they built it to last. We hope to have it. Like, it was meant to really be the next generation after Hubble, and Hubble's been in service since 1991. So with some luck, Webb could have a lifetime like Hubble's. One of the challenges for it, pretty early it got hit by a micrometeoroid that damaged one of the mirrors, So over time, the mirrors are going to continue to have minor damage. And so hopefully, though, that will not accumulate to the point where it falls out of service. So I think we could have it collecting data for us for a few decades, for sure.
Now, obviously, there's nothing stopping some random space rock from coming along and bam, right into the telescope. And if that happens, there's absolutely nothing we can do. Is that right? We're toast.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Space is hard, right? When we send stuff up there, we really take our chances that we do our best to minimize things like that happening, but, you know, sometimes life gets you.
All right, now I keep seeing stories. I've seen multiple stories, Doctor, that, okay, Webb discovered this and scientists are confused, or Webb noticed this and theories are being messed up. It's like Webb is turning everything upside down as far as science theories are concerned, or is that overblown?
It's kind of funny you say that, because some of us laugh that we're always being described as confused and baffled in these stories. but it is pretty true, and some of that work's going on at Penn State. What Webb was designed to do was show us things so far away that it was going to reveal things we've never been able to see before. And any time you open up, new ability to see things you couldn't see before, you're always going to find something that confuses you. So what's really been going on is that we've found we live in a galaxy, and we expected to find galaxies in the process of formation, but what we're finding is bigger galaxies existing earlier than we thought they should. So that's definitely confusing. It definitely means we probably made a mistake somewhere, but, I think we'll figure out what's going on pretty quickly, and it's going to be the data from Webb that lets us figure it out.
All right, now a follow-up because of that. All right, how old is the universe? I saw some story recently that claims maybe the universe is twice as old as what we thought.
Yeah.
How old, the current thought, how old is the universe? Is that going to change?
Oh, that's a great question. So to the best of our ability to estimate it, we have different ways of estimating it. We say it's around 13.7 billion years old. And so this question that you brought up is challenging that, in the sense of so the Big Bang happens, and then you need time for the universe to be able to start forming stars and start forming galaxies. And what we're finding is that we're finding these fully formed galaxies pretty quickly after the Big Bang. And so that does suggest, how the heck do you form a really massive galaxy in a short amount of time? And so there's, we don't have the answer. That's what people are working on. There's lots of people who that's their main area of interest. And one way you could solve that is say, well, maybe we made a mistake. Maybe the universe is older than we think. The problem is there's lots of different ways to get at that answer, and they all seem pretty consistent. And so unless a bunch of different people are making a bunch of different mistakes, that I don't feel like that's likely to change. But, and you never say never. This kind of result could force us to rethink some really strongly held ideas.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left. All right, Dr. Palmer, spill the beans. How many universes are there? Okay, because I'm a Star Trek fan. I know about the evil universe, okay, and that other one. What's the current theory? Because people are checking this out. How many universes are out there?
Well, it's funny because those ideas that show up in Star Trek and shows like that, they come from people speculating. There's a very good idea that there are more, like what you saw in all the Marvel movies about the multiverse. There are theories that's we live in something like a multiverse. That's one of those questions that's really hard to answer, that's really hard to think about. So I study the one that I can see, and other than that, I don't know what to really say, other than to say what we do as astronomers is study what we're able to detect, and there's only one universe that we're able to detect directly.
All right, now we got about 30 seconds left. I just saw a story. Sure. Apparently, at some point later this year, there's going to be an exploding star that we will literally be able to see at night outside. What is that?
Yeah, so some stars blow up periodically, so they don't completely destroy themselves. They just brighten, and that's going to happen. So we're going to get out information telling folks where to look if you want to see this bright star that sort of appears out of almost nowhere.
And this is going to be later this year?
Yes.
Cool. Any idea when?
I've read some of those stories too, but I forget exactly when. How about if I follow up, I'll get you that info that you can share with everybody about where to look, when to look, and what it should look like.
I mean, it's going to be like, you don't need binoculars or something. It's going to be, anybody can see this thing.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Well, Dr. Palma, we appreciate your time this morning, and apparently I've got to go get a set of these glasses.
You do. We're set at our house.
Or I'm going to go hide in the house or something. I don't know.
Hey, thank you very much for your time.
You are so welcome.
Appreciate it. Appreciate the expertise.
And again,
very cool.
$20.99 makes this a once-in-a-lifetime event, folks. This is a big event on April 8th.